This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture with me, Julia Jacobs, joined by Lim Soo Ann and Dashun Johan. So two stories for you today. In our first one, you know, the past few months here in Malaysia, it's been rife with political drama. People have started to wonder whether the Raya even has any power in what is supposed to be a democratic society. So we're going to discuss what we can learn from the events that have unfolded and what we, the Raya, can do moving forward.
Yes, and in our second story, a statue that reimagines the Greek myth of Medusa called Medusa with the Head of Perseus has been installed across from the criminal court in New York City to honor the hashtag MeToo movement. So in line with that, we look at the practice of reframing popular myths and folklore to empower women and how art can be an effective way of doing that.
And so our Twitter poll today is asking you, what do you think of reframing popular myths or folklore to inspire different ways of thinking about justice and equality? So your options are great idea or there's no need, and you can take that poll on Twitter at BFM Radio, or you can also tweet us your thoughts or WhatsApp them in at 018-789-8899.
That's right. And we're going to be discussing that story a bit later in the hour. But for now, you know, the political landscape in Malaysia is, you know, we can say in a disarray a bit. It started in February with the collapse of the Pakatan Harapan government and the formation of the Perikatan National Government led by Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin. And this happened after several members of Pakatan Harapan decided to work together with Barisan Nasional and PAS. And since then, our political landscape has been quite volatile and rather unstable. Not only does the current government only hold a razor-thin 2-4 vote majority in parliament, there is also infighting going on both sides of the political divide. So on the opposition side of things, the animosity between Tun Dr. Mahathir and Datuk Sri Anwar Ibrahim, you know, that's been going on for more than two decades now, has made it almost impossible for the coalition to reach a proper consensus on who their leader and prime minister candidate should be. And this arguably was what allowed Langkah Sheraton to happen in the first place.
Yes, and things are muddy on the government side. So tensions between UMNO and Bersatu have been rife from the beginning and is only getting worse in the past few months. And Muhyiddin, who has mostly avoided talking publicly about politics, is seen to be juggling between trying to accommodate, you know, his former friends who then became his enemies and then friends again, and also maintaining his position as the prime minister. And there are also factions within UMNO itself, as political analyst Bridget Wells puts it, floaters, desperados and diehards, all of whom seemingly have different motives and agendas.
So this nature of horse trading, party hopping and infighting is what caused the Sabah state elections to take place, and things have only intensified even more in recent weeks, as Anwar Ibrahim has repeatedly claimed that he has now enough MPs on his side to form a new government, and if Anwar succeeds, he will be the third Prime Minister of Malaysia in 2020. But at the same time, UMNO has announced that Perikatan Nasional has to agree to their terms in black and white, or they will withdraw their support completely.
Yes, and this level of, you know, plotting and scheming and all this sort of elite political drama is taking place every single day, or it sure seems like it. And what we've talked about so far kind of barely scratches the surface of it. And all of this, as we know, is going on while we're dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic, which has to this day infected 38 million people around the world and 17,000 people in Malaysia alone.
And I think lawyer Lim Wee Jet puts it best when he tweeted, you know, and to quote his tweet here, imagine the number of backdoor dealings, calls to drop charges and horse trading. And imagine if that same amount of effort or time is used to fight COVID-19 and to rebuild our broken economy. I go to bed tonight weeping for Malaysia.
And I think what has been particularly frustrating is that none of what we've talked about for the past few minutes involves the rakyat as active decision makers. A lot of politicians talk about restoring the people's mandate, but none of the possible outcomes of the politicking that's going on right now can actually restore the people's mandate. For example, we look at the current government, is not what PH supporters nor BN supporters had in mind when casting their vote in 2018. And even if Anwar's grand plan succeeds, and if he does form a new government, again, reportedly with some members of UMNO switching to his side, that too will not be respecting the people's mandate. So it seems like while the politicians are are being busy being frogs and playing the Game of Thrones, the rakyat can only be passive bystanders who unfortunately have to feel the full brunt of COVID-19, job losses and economic instability. So many have started to ask, what's the point of voting then? What role can we, the rakyat, play in these uncertain times?
Well, to help us unpack that and hopefully leave us with a more positive outlook is James Chai, a political commentator and head of commercial and research at Invoke Solutions. Welcome to the show, James. Thank you for joining us. So just to start with, what are your overall thoughts on the infighting, the horse trading and the elite level political drama that has been going on since February?
What we have seen is that when politicians have shown their true intentions, which is wanting to grab power, we have evolved into seeing it as a politics of interest, that most politicians would treat the acquisition of power with some sort of transaction rather than principles in place. But this is necessarily not a bad thing, where I think that after we've seen the chronological events in February, no politician could really be said to have a moral high ground anymore. Traditionally, that has been one of the main claims in the country, where you think that it is a contestation of some politicians who claim that they are more moral than the others. Now that we know that most politicians are driven by power to a certain extent, but of course, none of this is to discount that there are some politicians who are not drawn to that. It makes us rethink what politics is in the country, and it probably rejuvenates how we treat politics in the grand scheme of things.
I think regardless of which government we get, whether it's Muhyiddin's Perikatan Nasional, Anwar's new coalition, which has been reported to say reportedly with the faction from UMNO, or something else entirely, none of which is the government or coalition that Malaysians on both sides of the political spectrum voted for in GE14. So what does this say about the value and importance of our vote?
One thing we have to realise is that our system was never designed for us to vote for who governs the country. Our system has always been designed for you to only vote for your MPs or your arguments, which are people who govern your constituency. So we have always allowed the system, and it was designed like that, that politicians, after they've been voted in to represent your constituency, they would have to work out some agreement and compromises and to see who are the ones who are most fit to govern your country as the executive. So people in the cabinet, as well as your prime minister and deputy prime minister. But the problem with that is that the system is incongruent with our voting intentions in the past. In the past, it's been quite straightforward that you either vote for people who represent Barisan Nasional or Pakatan Harapan, and if you vote in a Barisan Nasional candidate, if they win, they're most likely to govern the country as the makeup in the coalition as it is. Only in recent years do we start seeing a configuration that's more fluid, that's more flexible, whereby people that you vote for, even though they represent Pakatan Harapan, they may break out of it and some other arrangements may come to place. So our voting intention has always been based on coalition. And we assume that that would ultimately translate into government. But since 2018, once we have unleashed this fluidity, that we know that the configuration is changeable, politics now has become more dynamic. That means the personalities as well as the character of the individual MP and ADUN that you vote for matters significantly now. It is not a straightforward choice in each election that you're just going to vote this block of individual who represents Pakatan or Barisan Nasional in. Rather, you have to pay attention to the personalities of the individuals that you vote for.
Okay, so I'd like to touch on what you brought up about voting for individuals instead of parties when we talk about the next elections later. But first, is there anything the rakyat can do at this juncture to shift the balance of power back to the people?
The main thing that all voters should do is to remember all the events that happened. I think traditionally, we have been very easy to forget certain events, and we move on by the next exciting thing that happens. Now, what I mean by this can be seen almost immediately in what happened in these few months. In 2018, we voted to throw out politicians who are involved in the 1MDB scandal, people who practice a corruption culture in politics. That has been the reason for the highest ever voter turnout. But drama happened around February. That has overtaken a lot of the previous events. Some people have taken the view that any government that replaces Muhyiddin's government is necessarily a good thing. That means that some of the voters are okay with us voting with UMNO, who we voted out in the first place. Now, we allow ourselves a short-term memory when it comes to politics. And when it comes to voting, we are driven by the events that happen only in the 2-3 weeks prior to the election. And that is where the problem lies. If the voters want to get back power, it is actually always within their grasp. It's just that they need to understand that remembering events of who betrayed you, who was not loyal, who was corrupt, all of these things must be something that voters practice as a form of responsibility. But we should never lose hope. What the events have revealed since February is a revelation of the motivations of politicians. It is not a revelation that we lack voting power. That has never changed. If you remember events and you still understand that the voting power is within your control, it is only that politicians have revealed their inner motivations, which are probably driven by power and power only, then that's where you regain control and power as the people.
Okay, now let's pivot to the next elections. Is voting for individuals instead of parties pragmatic when a lot of times we do not have enough information on who the lesser known individuals who are contesting are? In fact, during campaigns, parties go around and hang flags carrying their logos everywhere because we're conditioned to think about the logo more than the name beside the logo on the voting slip.
It is certainly not pragmatic and convenient because as you've pointed out previously that we only recognize politicians who make the news, and normally these are the same few personalities. Anwar, Mahathir, Kit Siang, these people, Kuan Eng, these people you see on the newspapers or like on your newsfeed, on social media every day, and people maybe even within your constituency, you're not quite sure who they are. Now, events like what happened since February, the infighting, the political elites changing guards and so on, should force us to pay attention to the individuals within your constituency. And to be frank, it is not that many people anyway, because the good thing is that you are confined to vote in one constituency only. And the only kind of people that you need to pay attention to are like probably the 3 or 4 people on the MP level and another 3 or 4 people at the ADUN level. Normally, it doesn't breach that amount. So to care on a local level as to how they manage that constituency and what their characters are, whether they are honest individuals or not, these are the only considerations that you should make. And to be honest, most people in the country actually make decisions based on what the local MP and politician has done within their constituency anyway. It's just that maybe in the urban setting, you are more drawn to the news of the mainstream politics, and therefore it would be a challenge for you to all of a sudden pay attention to a politician who is not that well known. What I also want to say is that now that we understand that politicians are driven by other sets of motivation, which are not necessarily a party struggle or any kind of high principles, it is also quite worthwhile for us to see this crisis as an opportunity as well. Because voters have always framed these events at a high level in a tone of helplessness, where, it's really outside of my control. It seems like they just do as they wish, and they don't ask me about it. When I am the main voting power in the grand scheme of things, but we should use this knowledge of knowing politicians as who they are, as a form of advantage. As how do you use that motivation that they have to coincide with whatever you want, so that they are driven towards that direction, and that's how you have managed most things at your workplace, in your career anyway. The same thing should be seen in the scheme of voting.
So now let's talk about the health dilemma of a general election. So on the one hand, elections are the best time for people to change the political landscape altogether. In fact, we needed a historic turnout to topple the Barisan National Establishment back in 2018. But on the other hand, there's COVID-19. So I'm guessing a lot of people are going to be afraid to go out and vote. So what do we do?
For me, I think the health crisis does take precedence over all forms of considerations. And this was admitted by the Prime Minister, Tan Sri Muhyiddin, last few weeks, where he knows that the snap polls were a contributing factor to the rise in cases in Sabah now. And I don't know if that's necessarily a responsible thing to do by any politician at all. And to be honest, once this has infected other countries as well, this has normally been the balance that they should take, which is whether politicians could actually put politics behind them and prioritize the health crisis. If it is forced that a snap general election should happen, I do foresee that there will be a huge decline in the number of people who turn out to vote, because you cannot blame individuals for taking the responsibilities to the health of themselves, their family and their communities to matter more than their responsibility as a citizen to vote, because many people are willing to put that aside as long as it still protects our health. And to be honest, how we had relative success before this whole Sabah cluster thing happened is because individuals in Malaysia have a higher sense of responsibility when it comes to health. We are more fearful of our lives and our health being affected, as well as our community being unhealthy, than to care about the inner fightings of politicians. So when push comes to shove, I do foresee Malaysians prioritizing health over politics.
So just a quick follow-up before you go, James. Choosing health over politics is great, but for the people who are unhappy with the shape of our current political landscape, what do we do? Because there is an argument to be made that if people don't push back and fight for our rights and don't vote, it allows the politicians to continue doing what they're doing now.
A lot of what happened in the past few months is a kind of tragedy. To see politicians not acting to whatever they say and doing things that are outside our expectations, that's something to be accepted. But the reason why we always feel like things are outside of our control is because for too long, our feudalistic thinking and our worshipping of politicians, whenever, let's say, they come by to our constituency, we feel so overwhelmed by their presence, is because we surrender too much to politicians. We need to know, and to be honest, it's quite evident as well, no matter how much politicking they go about, they ultimately still have to turn to the voters to make a decision. This tragedy is the best opportunity for us to ditch our feudalistic thinking and start being critical of politicians. We need to be critical of what they do, no longer any benefit of the doubt or like trying to like protect or defend them unnecessarily. We need to be able to see things as they are. We need to be critical, but we cannot be cynical. We cannot think that there is no point in voting because it's always been there. It's just our relationship with politicians, as well as how we have seen politicians in the past. They are not angels. They are not devils as well. They are people in the game, and their game is power. You need to understand how do you coincide whatever psychological makeup they have to what you want as a voter. If you want certain policies to be driven, how do you coincide that with politicians and their road to power? How do you make sure that happens? So it's just this thinking of power that is quite important. And you need to know that this is the best opportunity for you to share any kind of feudalistic understanding that you have with politicians. And most importantly, to remember the events that have occurred.
Thank you so much, James. That was James Chai, political analyst and the head of commercial and research at Invoke Solutions. And I think, you know, what James ended on is exactly, you know, my greatest takeaway. Don't forget, you know, don't let, you know, the events that are only happening just before the elections to cloud your judgment or to inform your judgment. You know, you really need to have a report card. And I think, you know, when we interviewed folks from Sabah for the elections, you know, some folks were actually preparing these sorts of report cards mm-hmm. about all the different candidates so that people will remember, yes, this is the sexist remark that this MP made. This is the bad thing that that MP did, but also the good things as well, so that you could come up with a balanced decision. And I think that's something that, you know, we should do when it comes to voting, that we really need to do our research on our candidates.
Yeah, and I think that's the key, because we have to keeping track of everything that's going on when so much is going on the daily is difficult, but it's something that I guess we just got to give ourselves homework, right? Because this is our future we're talking about.
Yeah.
So yeah, because politicians, both sides, regardless, you know, they will always come and change their stories on the daily, you know, and they are quick to forget about what happened a year ago and all that. But we cannot forget. We need to remember, keep track, and then make our judgments.
But I guess for this year, it comes amidst a lot of other uncertainties in people's lives as well, right? Because people are worried about bread and butter issues. People are worried about whether they'll have a job, they'll have an income. So I guess that really also emphasizes the need to remember all these things. Keep a diary.
And you know, there's so many bigger things, like, you know, investors coming in, they're also going to look at political stability. So that's also going to inform people's I suppose judgment on who should be, you know, in the leadership role, because who's going to give us the best sort of economic benefits, right? And but you know, if it does come to a snap election, is that something that you guys would look forward to or would, you know, participate in?
Oh, that's a dilemma right there. Because yes, on the one end, I truly believe that, you know, no matter what, if there is a snap elections, then we need to go out and vote, right? Because if you're happy, you need to show that, but vote and show that you're happy. And especially so if you're unhappy, this is the one time you can cause change. So I think that is important. But as far as, you know, the polarization, the various parties, like, I think one thing we perhaps need to also keep in mind is what James brought up is not, don't think so much about who is going to be prime minister and which coalition is going to be the government, but instead focus on individuals, because that is technically the only thing that we have the actual power over,
right?
Like our own constituency. And so if we focus on individuals, and if every constituency, everyone focus on who we think will be good individuals that are going to execute their jobs well, then perhaps as a collective, when all 222 of them come together, we will get a government or, you know, a parliament that's good.
That's right. And well, we'll see what happens, I suppose. Lots more to unfold, you know, in the next few days. And we'll keep an eye on that. But if you have any thoughts or if you have any ideas or anything that you want to share, you can always tweet us at BFM Radio or send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899. We're going to take a quick break, but we're going to leave you with Sheer Mag and Can't Stop Fighting. You're tuned to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.